Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, proud host of VFE. And today we got one of the stars, one of the education stars, as I like to call it, a superintendent that has just impacted many students, many lives, many families. I mean, it's to the point where I see Glenn in some of like these, like Christmas, I can't remember what it was, Glenn. You were dressed head and toe in this Christmas suit with these amazing socks. And Marlon and I had a comment on it. Shout out to Marlon Styles on it. But that's the type of leader, superintendent we want immersed in our communities. He is internationally renowned. He is domestically renowned. Multiple accomplishments, multiple awards from the superintendent level, local, state, name it. Glenn Robbins has it in his trophy case. And I am proud to host and have Glenn Robbins, who's the proud superintendent of Brigantine Public Schools of Brigantine, New Jersey, right? The accent is there. We were talking about it before, about the accent and talking fast. Love it, Glenn. I'm so glad to have you here and to geek out with you. Man, I tell you, I've been following your work for a while. I know you've been a superintendent 2016 during the pandemic. You were doing some really innovative stuff during the pandemic, even to now what you're doing in Brigantine. So Glenn, glad to have you on PFE, my friend.
It is a pleasure and an honor to be here, my friend. And I'm humbled by your words, really. Seriously, you know, like you mentioned, the suits that you and Marlon and many people watch from afar here and there. I have a suit for every holiday or occasion because we work in a school, man. We have fun. Absolutely. We have a good time. We build that culture each and every day. I'm a big Philadelphia Eagles fan. I know we're going into the Super Bowl. But I was told there was a lot of disappointed folks. The NFC Championship game after the Eagles won, they were disappointed the next day. And I said, why are you disappointed? They go, because you weren't in Eagles costume on top of the roof the next day celebrating for us. I'm like, all right, I need to get that suit next. So, you know, We have so many incredible things with our students, what you call scholars each and every day, our staff and our businesses and everything else you can think of. You know, people always remember how you made them feel when they walked in and prepared about life for 2 minutes when they're walking in the door and to see the superintendent making fun of himself wearing a wacky outfit or whatever to make them smile.
I love it, Glenn. And everything that you're doing is beyond textbook, right? You actually get to the core of relationships. And that is why you are beloved nationally and internationally. And speaking about your Eagles, yes, good luck, because my team, the Buffalo Bills, we lost to who you're playing against. And we don't want to see... We don't want to see Kansas City win anymore. I called Glenn in the beginning of the year when you guys acquired Saquon. I'm like, it's going to be a Bills-Eagles Super Bowl. Everybody laughed at me. I got one of the teams right, but I was hoping we were going to beat Kansas City. That was the fan in me, Glenn. But I tell you right now, I want my audience, right? You are one of the most strategic and intentional superintendents out there. I mean, I literally disaggregate your strategy implementation based off of what I'm seeing with your work. Please get to that level, that granular level, and that simplistic level so my audience could be able to apply your strategies and have, or emulate, I should say, the same success as you. But this first question, I've been waiting to ask you this because this is a fun question, right? Because many people, they see you on the national keynote stage, you know, ed tech providers, they want to unpack AI strategies from a systems lens with you. And just you being just a national leader, and how can I forget, right? We're not worthy. You're a top 100 best author. The book will get into that. But Glenn, what song? And literally, I want to hear this, okay? What song defines your leadership signature in the AC stage of education?
Yeah, so I thought about that, the AC, the after COVID. I am a major music junkie. But I think the one song, AC, after COVID and or during COVID for me, was Get Up by Shinedown. And why I picked that song? Why? Yeah. It's simple. It's talking about like you're doubting yourself. You're feeling down, but you got to get up and don't sell yourself short. And you're bulletproof if you realize all the things you've accomplished and what you've done, and you keep going. You don't realize who's watching you and pushing you and going forward with you. So I could have picked a bunch of different wacky fun songs. Like part of me was like, all right, do I pick Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt, you know, if I had Nine Inch Nails?
That's a great song.
But I think Get Up really exemplifies what we try to do each and every day, getting up and making a difference.
Absolutely. And Glenn, I love how you contextualize that as Get Up, right? Because when we think about the AC stage of education after COVID-19, and literally just looking at the multitude of residuals that we had to engage in with the aftermath of the pandemic. And instead of staying down, we had to get up, make sure we're continuing what we need to do and push ourselves, right? We can't doubt ourselves. I love the aspect that you said we have to become bulletproof, right? Because I think now in the AC stage of education, with a variety of different threads and tenets that we have to address as leaders and executive leaders, we have to be bulletproof and we have to stay up. Great song. Listen, Johnny Cash would have been, that's a great 1A, man. That is a great 1A. But you are, Glenn, and I stated this at the outset, and I say this with great admiration. You are a nationally acclaimed superintendent, many accomplishments, honors, awards, distinctions. I would love to see what that shelf looks like at home. But
you know what? I'll be perfectly honest what it looks like. They're on multiple shelves collecting dust.
There you go.
You know what? It's just one thing I put to the side and say, all right, I did that, but hey, this kid's life next day needs a whole nother different investment, needs a whole nother different way of looking at education, how do we keep moving forward. So I'm thankful and proudful for all the things, but I'm thankful to have all these great people around me, man. But that's I get it. And it's like, all right, tomorrow is a whole different day. Tomorrow is a whole nother avenue of education, all new problems. How do we keep moving forward? So those past victories are wonderful, but we got to keep going for the new game.
Absolutely. And Glenn, I love how with your leadership signature, you push everybody forward, right? And as always, your team, acknowledging their work, what they have done, that got you to where you're at and with within your learning organization. Absolutely. I always go by what my mother states, you got to hire smarter than you. And I always try to hire the smartest people because, again, it elevates the objective and the priorities of the learning organization. But Glenn, as a veteran and a mentor to many, right? And as a veteran superintendent, you've been in the role since 2016. How can leaders successfully adapt to the new educational demands that couple this rapid transformation that we are engaging in with our economy? I love the quote that Justin Trudeau said about a year and a half ago, is that we will never experience change this fast, yet it will never be this slow. So how do we adapt to these new educational demands? And then also, how do we truly create an education operating model that prepares the antithesis of you and I, Glenn, Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, for the future of the world?
Well, I think about our good friends, Mike Lieberfeld and Nick Polyak.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the unlearning, and they talk about that they're never finished learning. And I think that's a lot of things to unpack from those statements. One of my favorite books by Ryan Holiday is Ego is the Enemy. And I think a lot of time leaders get that seat and they think they are the greatest thing in the world and they haven't done anything yet. And or every day is a different battle. So I look at it from that range that once you get there, you need to learn a whole new skill set. So who are you around? Who are you talking to? Who are you connecting to? So I think that's the biggest part, is the connectivity. You know, we talked about, you know, the teams that I have, but I didn't mention the teams that I have nationally, the friends communicating and saying, hey, I've done this 16 times. I'm about to do it for the 17th time. How would you do this? You know, how do you? And then also, you know, when you're mentoring people, ask them, the ones that are younger and or in different positions that see a different aspect of what you're looking at, get their perspective. Like I said, a lot of times you don't have the answer, and you said it, right? You don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I tell my team all the time, I didn't hire them to be shadows. You know, right. I got my own shadow. I want people to push back and ask those hard questions. So having that connectivity around the country, having the learning model in your head that you're always learning, you're never going to finish, you know, I think is something that we need to hold true and dear to our heart. And the mentoring aspect of giving and taking is that you're constantly learning together with others, regardless of where they are. The one thing that really pushed me through the whole COVID aspect and for where we are now was multiple Zooms with people all across the country and internationally, you know, checking in to see what were they doing in Florida, California, New York, or whatever it may be, and constantly relying on each other instead of thinking, I'm the best, this is how I'm going to do it. And then you see a lot of bad things happen for those that have done that. And then also, like I talked about that bulletproof, we talk about after COVID. I think it was a little more strenuous after COVID because of once you start coming back, do you have the mask? Do you not have the mask? Do you have the precautions? You know, then you have all these curriculum changes that are pushed on a state or nationally. How are you adapting to that? How are you dealing with other boards? So once again, it's going back to having a sounding board with others saying, I'm struggling and or I'm being successful, but how do I not fall into that pitfall? So I think that's the model, is you constantly need to lean on others, connect with everybody else, and realize you are the furthest thing from greatness. You know, you are just a human being trying to learn each and every day.
I love that, right? We are just an independent cog that make a collaborative stronger. I believe in that concept, Glenn. I love that you stated it. Definitely shout out to Dr. Michael Loverfeld. Love and love his work out of North Shore in Illinois, and underscoring what he always state in conversations I have with Michael, that whole unlearning, where you have to learn to unlearn to relearn. And I think those three words are so imperative in the AC stage of education. You stated it, a whole new skill set for this level of connectivity within education, besides the compounding, right? The compounding variables that we face with every single day. Now, Glenn, this is a sub question because I want to expand on this, because I completely concur with your notion around having individuals and stakeholders push back on diverse ideas, diverse perspectives. To my audience, that is a great contextualization. Peter Senge's creative tension, right? That's how we truly eliminate independent silos and create these interdependent tenets within the operating model of education. Glenn, creative tension in the context of, I like to say, this divergent team as opposed to convergent, which is silos, right? How do you now create creative tension in the context of having these really intellectual deep conversations around various perspectives that sometimes could be outliers, but again, it creates that tension among the team to accelerate the objectives? Some people in education view that as a negative. They avoid creative tension, right? But we problem seek to problem solve. What does that environment look like, Glenn? Because that's an outlier in the education sector. The ed tech sector that we know, that's every day, every second, every minute. That's why we get the innovations. But education, no. How do you create that, Glenn?
I think, you know, it goes back to communication and relationships. I think it has to do with the overall mindset that you're trying to create with the teams that you're building. So what is the problem you have and how do we handle it? You know, so what if and how might me in yes end, you know, constantly moving forward, because to your point, there are a lot of people that will push back and or there's just too many problems. And I call them chief yeah but officers, the CYBO, you know, because everybody took out. You know, well, we can't do that. Well, you know, we tried this already, you know. So I push back on that and say, all right, let's really try something here and let's get the kids involved. Let's see what their perspectives are. Because a lot of times we are, just because my great friend David Kolberhaus says this all the time, just because you're working in a learning institution doesn't mean you're actually a learning institution, you know, for the fact you know, like you're just continuing to do traditional things. So that's why we push it and say, all right, how do we have an ungraded class period? And how do we allow kids to flourish and do things and projects that we allow them to have the freedom and creativity?
Yeah.
You know, we, you know, do different things in our hallways or communities that, you know, other people will be frowning upon. You know, a lot of times people are they're just so used to traditionalism. They're so used to urban life and myths that their parents or teachers told them. And you got to try to fight back. But I do it through the design process. And I'm sure you heard it many times where you constantly question and breaking it down and saying, all right, what is our goal? You know, do we want kids to be able to go and say to an interview question one day that, sorry, Mr. Employer, can you tell me, is it A, B, C, or D that this question is going to be answered in? Or can I speak to you face to face and have a true conversation about what I did in the seventh or eighth grade, let alone high school and college, you know, that really can propel this company forward. Inquiry thinking, continuously going to all the staff, continuously going to the kids. They keep coming up with all these great notions and they start joining your outlier self on the outside. And then before you know it, you're all on the inside looking at it and go, how'd we get here?
Glenn, and to my audience, Glenn's answer, right? If you think about every single isolated thread that Glenn is talking about, those are, I like to say, borrowed practices from the business science world. And if you can see how Glenn intentionally invites the most important customers, Glenn, you know, in the BC stage of education before COVID, if we called our families and our students customers, everybody will roll up and like, are you kidding me? They're not customers. Well, in reality, they are because we're providing the services for them. But Glenn is very intentional about including the voices of his constituency and his customers. He alluded to the design process. Unpack to my audience, I want you to unpack the design thinking process because Glenn was very intentional in that first step or that first stage of the design thinking process was understanding the needs of the customers, right? And when you understand the needs of the customers, take that ethnographic approach, you'll be able to have that creativity and change of curriculum and pedagogy as Glenn was alluding to it. And another thing that Glenn highlighted, which I really love, is the power of the network effect, right? National network effect, state network effect, where developing those new skills, the new leadership signature elements, I like to say, it's not one that's independent, but interdependent. Glenn, really, really great contextualization of the business science aspects that you're interfacing and integrating into education intentionally. Appreciate that, especially what you're doing, exercising the voices of your students. But I want to unpack your most recent book, best-selling book. To my audience, the book is entitled Calm in the Chaos: Ancient Stoic Wisdom for Successful School Leadership. Now, Glenn, I read your book, yes, and I'm upset with you, Glenn, because I usually say this to everybody, whoever it might be, right? I'm like, I got your book. I got the sloppy copy that I, you know, mark up, but I need the signed copy. So Glenn, I got the sloppy copy. I need the signed copy. But when I was reading your book, the undergirding themes align to some of these persistent conundrums that we're facing in the AC stage of education, right? Mm-hmm. But I want you as the author, what are the major themes from your book and how can the content and themes impact any leader's repertoire and mindset to be calm in an ecosystem of uncertainty?
Well, certainly do. So first part of my answer is B, I'll gladly send you a signed copy. And I have another book coming out March 11th. So I'll sign that copy as well and send it your way. I'm excited about
Amazing.
That.
Amazing. That one's
I Won't Back Down, How Educators Can Turn Rejection into Redirection. And it's all about music and educators, all about famous musicians. So you'll love that part. I know you will. You're going to dive
Absolutely.
Into it. But Calm in the Chaos is something that Danny Bauer and I sat down and talked about. It's, I want to say, back in 2019. And I had the idea in my head, being a historian, love history. And my grandfather would always say, it's not the problem you have, it's how you handle it. And I was always curious where he came up with that notion. He grew up in a blue-collar world, same as my family. My father was a third-generation well driller for water wells. So it was hard manual labor. But he was also dealing with the business aspect, dealing with customer service aspect, dealing with working with the state. So you're dealing with all these multiple personalities. And Grandpa would always say, it's not the problem you have, it's how you handle it. So mm-hmm. in mixed 2019, I was going, as a superintendent at that time, I was having some difficulties. And I said to myself, I know I'm the furthest person from having difficulties. I know every district, everybody in the world that I talk to is having difficulties. And how do we put together something that maybe can put them at ease or calmness? And because they're not alone. So from a historical perspective, I reached out to Danny and brought him in for a conference that I was hosting. And I thought he'd be a perfect co-author to write this with. Yeah. And we said, you know, let's sit down and write this. And then COVID happened and the world happened. We move, he moves, and new jobs and all that other fun stuff. And then we finally sit down back in 2022 and said, all right, let's get this bad boy out. And we focused on wisdom, justice, courage, and temperance, and then obviously trying to get to equanimity, which is extremely difficult. But we use those four words because of the virtues that were laid down by the ancient Stoics. And we talked about...
And Glenn, if I can just interject really fast, for my audience, can you repeat those four words again? We use this as an asynchronous professional learning tool. So just want them to really write those words down.
So wisdom, justice, courage, temperance, and if you can get there, equanimity.
Mm. Wow.
So we talk about all these different things, like wisdom. Are you smart enough to have the ideas that are needed, you know, and how do you continue to grow? Justice from a larger organizational standpoint. Now, I know there's always been talk of social justice and changing the systems and so forth, but you can also look at justice as you're responsible for public money in a public school. So when you put your budget out there, the buck stops with you. And how are you personally and the organizationally doing the right thing for all children and all staff for the community? Courage. To some people, it's just getting out of bed in the morning. To others, it's I have a lesson going on, or, you know, there's something going on in my district that I need to address, whether it might be something that might be confrontational. It's not the easiest conversation you're going to have. And then it's temperance, the part that almost like we're not taking it personally and breaking things. We broke down those chapters in that way because what we did was we put in different stories that Danny and I had been through. And I think that we were trying to relate to the audience in some way there. But then we also gave case studies to the end. So I know a lot of books have like extra workbook pages and so forth. We built that in because at the end, you're going to have dealing with a coach that might get in trouble. You're going to have a teacher that argues against their observation. You're going to have a parent that's irate at 1 a.m. You're going to have a social media firestorm that's going on. And you can't control it. You're going to have people in the rumor mill saying your board meeting is going to be filled and all this stuff is going on. Each and every day, we deal with so many different situations. And how do you handle it when it lands on your lap? And I think that's why we call it calm into chaos, because if you're running around with your head cut off or you're punching back at everything and angry at everything, and or you're calm, everybody's watching and you want to be a reflection for everybody to follow. So Danny and I shared those stories from personal experiences, changed some names and scenarios around a little bit, but we also built this book short to point because we have not that much time and our busy lives. Also know that you might not have the best mentor. You might not be in a school system that has these events taking place. You might be in a cushy little world, and good for you. I'm happy for you. Right? But you're going to get hit with adversity one day, whether you move up to that role. When you do, are you ready for it? So our goal there was to prepare you with those case studies so you could do a reflective piece yourself and or as a team. So if you have a small team, leadership team, or a big leadership team, you sit down and talk about, all right, how do we handle this situation based on these three questions that were posed to us? How would we as an organization, how would we as a team address this? Because we are all interconnected on this. And I think people forget that at times that one person falls off, and the dominoes start to fall, and then all the whispers starts and all that, and then it's harder on the leader. And we tap into, like I said, Stoic philosophy that's been around for thousands of years and continues to be repeated in movies and books and songs and everything else. It's not going away because it is so intentional what we do each and every day.
Yeah, Glenn, great answer. And to my audience, now we're starting to depict and unpack the secret sauce for Glenn's success, long-term success as an executive leader, the intentionality around relationships and culture, right? Relationships and culture. And you can see it through the content and the themes of his book. And this kind of segues into this next question, Glenn, because now as you've been focusing on relationships, right, have this continuous learning organization where now diverse perspectives and creative tension is warranted. And when you look at the core themes of your book, specifically around wisdom, justice, courage, temperament, leading, that is all, I like to say, a conglomerate of a successful culture. Now I see why there's this acceleration of innovation within your organization. Now I understand why there's that seamless third person outside, right? I see the seamless integration with human intelligence and artificial intelligence together. So now that we unpack relationships and culture, the prerequisite that lead to this next work around challenging traditional nodes in education for innovation and AI, just focus on innovation right now. Okay, we'll get to AI, but how do you now address, let's say, these chronic absenteeism quandaries that we're facing, teacher shortages in multiple areas, including, you know, CLPs and nurses and behavioral techs, where we have this shortage in a variety of different realms within the ecosystem. And definitely now we just most recently read and learn about the NAEP scores and this exacerbation of outcome gaps, right? So how do we innovate, right? We got the prerequisites of our culture and relationship. How do we now innovate a traditional model with this level of urgency to re-engage our most important stakeholders and customers?
So I think there is no silver bullet. We know that. I know there's a lot of people out there trying to make some pretty pennies real fast, claiming that there are certain things that are damaging the culture and damaging test scores. There is so much that goes on behind the scenes. You know, I followed college football, and Dabo Sweeney from Clemson would always say, I am judged and based off of 18 to 21-year-old men or children. You know, I don't know what's coming to me. I know what kind of person I'm recruiting, but I don't know what's going to happen the night before. And it's the same thing for us. But I think it goes back to this. You mentioned the teaching shortage. You mentioned all these different things. I think it's our message around it. You know, we know the national media wants to destroy education. They've been doing it my entire career, yours too, right?
Absolutely.
They talk about, you know, teachers and how they have the summers off and all these other things. But I look at it like this. You're making an investment to your future. You're making an investment to your number one most prized possession, your children. Don't you want the best of the best to be offered? So in order to get the best of the best, you got to pay your teachers. You got to pay your administrators. All right, let's not beat around the bush. You need to understand that these people are putting in way more than a 40-hour work week.
Yes, they are.
Or how many children in that chair, in that classroom? So I look at it like that. Secondly, you know, money is one thing, and that does attract people. But culture is everything. And I call it the threshold moment. The second they walk through the door, and I talked about this earlier with my crazy suit, the second they walk through that door, does the school scream, whoa, this is an awesome place I want to be? Or is it, we're here again? And it's the same thing for the classrooms. And that's why we talked about the redesigning and intentionality of talking with the kids of how they want to be structured, and the same thing for the class, for the teachers. That threshold moment means everything to me. It's like going to an amusement park. As soon as you get there, you're walking past that line that says, welcome, you're in a different world. I had a teacher years ago, and I'll never forget, I put up a bunch of different wacky things in the hallways. I had Lego boards, I had surfboards, and I still have a lot in my districts now. But I was doing all this as a principal, and I had all these stations out in the hallways that could be learning anywhere, anytime. And I've continued that practice everywhere I've gone. But I'll never forget my first time as at a faculty meeting. I'm unveiling all this after the summertime, and one teacher goes, well, what are the kids too busy outside at the Lego board instead of being in my class?
Right.
And here's the Jersey guy in me. I said, well, here's a question for you. How bad does your lesson suck that you don't want to be in that class? So it comes back to that. How are we inspiring and making wanting kids to get to class? Making
Absolutely.
Them about their lives outside that they might be, you know, I've worked in some tough schools. We're a Title I school. There are some families that just do not have the advantages as are others. And what are these coming in? So they can forget about that and be loved and appreciated and know that they're a kid, they're not a number, and they're in a different spacing types of room. Their voice matters, that they help buy furniture or redesign things in the school just because I said it's a possibility and I rewrote the mantra. So that's that. And then it's, what are the programs we're offering? You know, are they truly intentional? Like, I know we have to do all the core subjects, and I'm a firm believer in the foundational aspects of the core subjects. Mm-hmm. But how are we taking it further to relate to them? How are we working it into YouTubing? Everybody wants to be a TikTok influencer and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
YouTube is still one of the number one or number two most social media used platforms. So how are we showcasing the kids' work on that? How are we getting them to be podcasting? Here we are podcasting right now. I have the eighth grade girls, they started last year in seventh grade, in an ungraded period, start a powered up podcast for about female leadership and empowerment at seventh grade. Ungraded class period. They're writing questions. They're answering, they're questioning people. They walk up to people and say, we need to interview you. Just yesterday, they published an awesome podcast with Brianna Scurry. Now, if you're a soccer fan like I am, that's huge. She was the World Cup goalie, if you remember back in 1999, when the girl ripped off the jersey after scoring a PK to win the first ever. She's a two-time Olympian. So these girls were on a trip with their dad. But because of the fact we've empowered them the last several years, they walked right up to her, not caring about anybody else, and said, hey, we're so-and-so and so-and-so. We want you to come on our podcast. And it's very hard for an adult to say no to
us to even do that, Glenn. Right.
So they did that. That's just one aspect of it. You know, we do, we talked about that intentionality, about everybody working together and designing what our learning looks like. We teamed up with the Chamber of Commerce and asked businesses after COVID, right after COVID, everybody's starting to open their doors again. How do we get the connection for kids? And I traveled all over the globe. I traveled on number of trips with different organizations to see schools. And one thing that really related to me was all these massive companies in these massive districts that were doing things for 12th grade. And I'm like, well, I'm a pre-K to 8th district. And I've always hated the line, wait till you get to high school. Wait till you get to college, right? You and I aren't waiting, Michael. We're doing things when we want to do things and move things forward. And we're teaching these kids. So we talked to the businesses and said, I don't know how to do this, but let's maybe build something. And at the president at the time said, let's build a Mr. Rogers project. And I said, all right, I'm working with you. What do we got? She goes, well, a lot of the people are struggling with social media. I said, that's perfect, because I have every social media influencer in the world in our district. So the businesses, we had to, you know, really push on them at first to get coming in. Like, why do I want to work with eighth graders? And it's a brand new program. The businesses then came in and shark tanked it in front of the kids. The kids were already pre-selected on who they're going to work with, because some didn't want to work with an insurance company. Some rather work with a surf shop, you know, and or there's a clothing store or whatever. It's not mega conglomerate. They're small town USA entrepreneurial stores. And they're trying to get the word out there, and they're looking for new clients. They're looking for new clientele. So these kids will work with them on their social media pages for Facebook and Instagram on redesigning that. Then they're working on Canva to put up a giant sign on the door that when the customer comes there, regardless who they are, especially where we are, we're a shore-based area, we have a lot of tourism that comes through. They can click on they can see this awesome poster that was made. They can click on the QR code, and it goes exactly to where the business owner wanted them to go. And they're teaching, and they go back and forth. The kids have to email them and say, hey, I'm thinking about this slogan. I'm thinking about this idea. And they have to go back and forth with text messages and emails. Hey, great. With the business owner, who's helping grade this? And they're going back and forth. And then they come back, and then the kids give their pitch to them. And then from there, they take a field trip every marking period to all the various businesses so they can see that. You know, so just because your group worked with insurance doesn't mean you got to work with the surf company group or the other group that's a clothing store or the food store. So they go to take the kids to see all the different places that they have. Right. If you've already done the research, but not everybody went to that one place because it wasn't their assigned project. And they see it all. And the companies give out swag. They give out food. They do PR pictures on Facebook and Instagram everywhere about the kids that are celebrated. They pick a winner. They build scholarships into this for the kids to go to high school. If they want to go to a certain high school that requires money and things like that. But they built something that now has a 25 business wait list to get into our district, which is phenomenal. We had to redesign the classes again, like just to get more time for these business owners that want to come in. But we gave them an opportunity. For now, you know, we took it a step further. The local paper just came in and said, hey, we want kids writing for the local paper, right? How amazing. Great is that? I'm sure there's a high school paper and a middle school paper and all that. And we already have a YouTube channel, but we had some writers and now they're putting out articles through the editor and their eighth grade ELA teachers to help them push out an article or two or three, or who knows where it's going to go and become published journalist in eighth grade. You know, so those are just some of the things. And the veterans, we were number one in the state and national veteran school of the year last year. It's like, that's a lot of pride in that, because here they are, they work with the veterans, they take food to the homes, they work and talk about what we can do differently. They're constantly learning with the teachers on the veteran moment.
Amazing. But it
goes back to all that. And then, hey, I didn't even mention AI yet. I didn't mention the cool thing.
That's the next question. Next question.
That's my point. We're building all these little things intentionally, from furniture to organization to structural to the overall, not just the school district in itself, but the community in itself, all working together. Hey, you know what? One thing, we live on an island. This is where we work. We're not the next to the Atlantic Ocean. The pool company, the aquatic center down the street comes to us and says, hey, would you like to offer some free lessons to kids? I'm like, I'm a dad. I want my kids to know how to swim. Yes.
Yeah.
That was the first year. The next year was, hey, Glenn, we got a grant. Can we start maybe doing some lessons and or safety lessons for, you know, fifth and sixth grade? And I'm like, all right, talk to me. It's like, all right, fifth grade, beginner, all right? Sixth grade, advanced, you know, because some kids are really good swimmers. We got some dynamic surfers here and so forth. And we built that. And then this past year, they came to me again and said, you know what? We want to do National Junior Lifeguard Certification in 7th and 8th grade. These kids can go right into being a lifeguard right away. So not only do you have the business owners that are hiring them from that standpoint that we want to work with you at 8th grade, but now you have another platform that you want to go to the lifeguarding aspect, and maybe you save a life one day. And maybe we save a life one day, because sadly, some kids are living on an island, don't know how to swim. And now they do. We kept looking into the community and saying, how else can we serve you? How else can you serve us and make it a true community school district?
Glenn, I tell you this to my audience, that is an answer that you want to replay back multiple times. You want to unpack it, segment it, because the strategies, or what Glenn articulated, are systemically aligned to, I like to say, Glenn, elements and indicators from my 22nd century systems learner framework. And one of the key learner attributes for the 22nd century is empowering the voices of our students, right? Preparing them for the future of the world and the future of the work. And what you did intentionally with this level of vitality with partnering with businesses is just absolutely remarkable. My only question is, when can I bring Mikey to Brigantine Public Schools? Because you are preparing students for the 22nd century. And what I love about it, right? The whole thing with the podcast, I'll tell you this, and I say this everywhere that I go, Glenn. I was like, when we were third, fourth, fifth, sixth graders, we weren't going up to our superintendents and demanding a new educational task or a new educational model. Glenn, I always used to say, when I was a high school senior, I didn't even know who my superintendent was. Now we got, you know, third, fourth, fifth, seventh, eighth graders coming to your office, knocking and demanding specific changes, right? Demanding.
Well, you know what's the nice part? Not demanding, but
absolutely.
Answering the question, like, hey, how might we do this differently, Mr. Robbins? And to your point, when they see the changes that are made based on what they've done and recommended, it continues forward. The podcast came from recommendations. An ASL program in our district came from recommendations. You know, changing of the furnitures and the classes and the cafeterias and all that came from kids' recommendations. Obviously, the teachers had voice as well, and they helped guide us through our process. But yeah, that is the intentionality behind it. Everything coming together as one, because we kept saying compassion and empathy, and how do we get to the 22nd century? Because you and I have been doing 21st century talk for too long. You know, like, these kids have so much in their hands, the staff has so much in their hands. And how do we continue to elevate that? So when they go to the high schools, and high schools have been, I've been doing this for years. High schools are calling me like, why are you doing this to us? I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, they're like, we have to change programs now. I'm like, well, you should have changed them by now because all this stuff, you know. And I didn't mention esports and all the other stuff that we've been doing too, but.
Glenn, you gotta save that for my Tech Academy, Dolly, because we're gonna get into that. But Glenn, you are right. We were on this island 7, 8, 9 years ago when experimentation was a curse word in education. Remember that, Glenn? You couldn't use the word experimentation. Now experimentation is warranted. We were talking about the 21st century in the early 2000s, and people are like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. The incubators of innovators. But Glenn, now I want to touch upon what everybody recognizes you for, and including me, right? Because I get strategies and different techniques and tactics from you. This whole thing around AI, right? The ecosystem is finally shifting towards that. Glenn, I'm going to put this out there. You and I have been talking about AI for forever. Right. Mm-hmm. Now that is catching on, especially with these generative platforms. There are multiple questions, right, to address within this multivariate tenet within our model. But I want to focus on the basic foundations of implementation with AI. Specifically, and you know that I like to say that leadership vertical, or that vertical within the organization, from leaders, structural leaders, ensuring that there's ethical implementation and the basic foundations of AI with classroom practitioners in their classrooms. Now, if I'm an instructional leader, Glenn, both of you and I, former principals, former assistant principals, now let's put our principal hat on, okay, together. If I'm an instructional leader, or even you, when you was a history teacher back in high school, me, a fourth grade teacher, what are my top 5 strategies to guide this shift into the digital age paradigm?
I think number one strategy is being stoic. In anything personally, everything comes to you and you're just embracing it. Adaptability is my second one, because everything, you mentioned that quote earlier, change, and more change is happening each and every day. And then I go back to my 3 principles of design thinking. How might we? Yes, and what if? I tell my teachers all the time, and this is where the rubber hits the road here. If they don't feel supported, trusted, and given the autonomy to run in their classrooms, they're never going to implement anything that a district leader is pushing on them, because they'll say, oh, this is the next new thing, or this person will be gone in a year or two, and or I'm 3 years from retirement. You know, but you have to give them that psychological safety that they can try different things, and you're going to applaud them if they fail. But they're not completely failing. They've only failed one time, like we said. It's an iteration, and now they're going to try again because they're still getting a lesson across. Maybe it wasn't as great as they hoped it would have been, but now we can do it differently. And then you fall into that whole AI category. How are you modeling it from your principal position or your superintendent position or your VP position? Are you sharing out resources, or are you hiding behind it and saying, oh, it'll go away, don't worry, you know, ban cell phones and no technology and nothing else like that, because we're not moving to the 22nd century. We're going to go backwards where I was comfortable for all my years when I was a teacher, and this is the way I was always told, instead of what's next for these kids in their life, the world that they're preparing for. So I think you have to showcase it. I think you have to model it. I think you need to bring in professional development and be able to show them how it's being used, not just in education, but in any realm of any organizational structure that we have. Mm. And when I say bring in PD, you bring in good people. Don't just bring in that low-hanging fruit. Bring in people that can really knock staff socks off and answer questions. You know, how do you do this with the third grade? How do you do this with an 8th grade? How do you do this with a high school? You know, or I was struggling with this, or I don't know how to truly use this program. You know, we used a couple of different platforms, and for the last couple of years when AI was out, really being out since ChatGPT, I kept saying, yeah, keep trying. Be mindful. Don't put the important information in there you're not supposed to put in there. Let's use common sense there. But continue to try to develop your lessons, your programs, and structure, and everything else. And now I have teachers, give you an example, Title I basic skills teachers, special education teachers, who are now putting in, asking for different types of differentiation for different kids that are struggling in certain areas. They take basically saying, this student is struggling with comprehension. What can we do to make this better, to learn more comprehension? And it spits out so many great ideas. And they take it and they continue to develop with that kid. We have kids that come through us from various different languages, and we use that by building in and having an actual conversation with these kids instead of, They're from where? And we don't have any SL teacher that can talk like that. You know, so we look at it that from that aspect. AI is so plentiful. And we also have to be mindful of our policies. Obviously, from a superintendent organizational structure, is it built into the technology plan that we already have, the acceptable use policy. You know, I know a lot of districts want to go out there and make these massive amounts of changes. AI is another tool, like a cell phone, a Chromebook, an iPad that you have in a class. And how are you using that for all those different areas? So I can keep diving into it, but it goes back to how might we, yes, and what if the adaptability, everything continues to come at you, and being stoic and just taking it in and not being overwhelmed. One of my favorite quotes is Winston Churchill, you don't stop and throw a stone at every dog that barks, right? Think about all these things, all these barks that are coming at you. You know, you would never get to where you want to go if you just stop and address that. So those are my strategies on what I try to recommend to people.
Love it, Glenn. Love it, Glenn. And I tell you to my audience, one thing that I love about Glenn, and Glenn, I don't think you even know how you motivate me sometimes with your quotes that you put on social media. So I really just love that. And then the Winston Churchill quote, you are the king of quotes, but I really ask, your answer is great. But what I really love about this, and I can see why your district has that elevated level of innovation, there's a focus on psychological safety, right? And when you have psychological safety within your learning organization or work environment, chances are there's going to be this acceleration of innovation and creativity around a static document, which I'm referencing to, is the instructional artifact that we call curriculum. Love the aspect that we as leaders have to model the practice, right? Sharing the resources and modeling what that looks like, professional learning and policy, but always just love it. Stoic and adaptability. And then how might, Glenn, I can't wait for my audience to replay this a multitude of times, right? That's differentiated instruction at the adult learning level. But Glenn, last question. Now, I kind of know what the words are based off of our podcast episode today, but I'm only going to limit you to three words. It never works, Glenn, with any of my guests. So take it as it is. What three words do you want today's audience to leave our episode with regarding creativity, AI, and innovation to be grounded in the instructional demand that reaches Generation Alpha and Generation Beta in the AC stage of education?
Let's see if you had these words on the tip of your tongue. Embrace, ignore, and the last word is why.
I was completely off. I was actually going back and referencing, Glenn, three words from your book, right? I thought stoic was going to be one. I thought adaptability was going to, but you fooled me.
I already talked us in. I got, we're moving for the third word all.
I was like, listen, you're giving my audience even more. Please go ahead. Embrace, ignore, and why. Go right ahead, Glenn.
So obviously you have to embrace everything that's coming towards you, right? That's our job as a learning organization, the true B organization. You have to continue to embrace all these different things that are coming at you, technology, challenges in the world, whatever it may be. How do we continue to bring it in and build from there? Ignore the critics. You got a lot of people that will say, no, we should not be doing this. No, we should not have this technology. No, we should not be going this route. Ignore the critics. You have plenty of them. And no one remembers the critics. They remember the person that rose up. Sort of like that get up song earlier in the beginning. You know, you rise up, you get to where you are because you're pushing forward on ideas that's best for all. And I think a lot of times we listen to the critics that only categorize in certain groups. And like we talked about earlier, Michael, this is the fact that there are some people, no matter what they do, will never be able to achieve what that other group's agenda already is, and or they'll never be able to achieve the great things because of the agendas that other people have. And you and I have seen way too many people, amazing leaders who are not in this field anymore, or at least not in a district building anymore, that need to be back, you know, based on the way their styles were, based on their diversity, based on their mindsets. So many great leaders who are just pushed out for all the wrong reasons. But I loved it because they stayed true to who they were and they ignored the critics and continued to do what was best for all. And that's what we're here about, every single kid and staff member. And my last one is a sort of like another Stoic quote in a way, is you don't take the top level perception that you receive. Ask why. You know, when a new program comes out, why should we use this? You know, or why can't we use this? Or ask it several times, like, why is this a great program to continue moving forward with this? Why is this an organization or a system or something we should be working with? You got to ask those deeper level questionings instead of just taking it at face value. Because you and I, there's a lot of people that put on a great mask and they don't have the depth and knowledge in order to help push the forward. And that's what I always say to people, embrace it, ignore, and why.
Glenn, oh, wow. I tell you, that was a motivating answer for me personally. So if it's affecting me, I'm inferring that my audience is having the same. I like to say the sticker shock, Glenn, your answer brought goosebumps up my arm. Glenn, it's just been an absolute honor and pleasure to have you on VFE. I tell you, if I could, I would move to Brigantine right now, live on an island, have all the great aspects of the Jersey Island where you're at, and then have my son in your district, because you are innovating, disrupting, and at the same time, creating meaningful relationships, positive relationships, where culture is definitely leading your strategy implementation. Glenn, if I was to, or my audience wanted to reach out to you, or if I wanted to reach out to you, how would I be able to do that on social media?
Yeah, so socials are easy. It's Glenn G. Robbins, two N's, two B's, two N's in Glenn, two B's in Robbins, Glenn G. Robbins. And then you can also just go to my website, glennrobbins.com. It's really simple that way. And I encourage people to reach out. I love working and talking with other people from all over the world or country, because it makes us better. And, you know, Like I said, I'm excited for what's next to talk about AI, because I didn't talk about all the great things that we're doing from kindergarten all at eighth grade each and every day. So you're going to be stoked about those answers, my friend.
Oh, well, I'll tell you this, Glenn, and you're going to be, because I consider you one of the experts that I follow and that I love dearly. You're coming back for a part two. We got to do this for a part two. So we're going to have Glenn Robbins, two N's, two B's, and then the two numerals. Glenn, my friend, I tell you, I can speak to you all day. Thank you so much for doing this for me. I truly, truly appreciate it. You have a big fan up in Rochester, New York.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.